Hey everyone, it's Lydia here. I'm a little bit nervous for this week's Weirdly Personal. It feels like a very big one. It feels like something I've been thinking about for a long time, and I've actually been meaning to make a video about this for quite a long time, but it just hasn't happened. But it's here now. This is what we're going to get into today. So I don't even know really how to get into this. I'm just going to gush, so hopefully you will come along for the ride.
If life feels like a whirlwind of clarity and confusion, pull up a chair. Welcome to The Weird Years.
So what got me thinking that I wanted to talk about this again was I saw this video, and maybe you saw it. It was by Alex Cooper, who is Call Her Daddy, massive podcast. You probably know it. Big podcast goals. And she posted this video, which was called I'm Not Ready for a Baby. And I was like, oh, I've really been needing to do a Weirdly Personal episode about where I'm at with the kids decision, because you'll probably notice we've been talking about kids a lot on the podcast recently. We talked to Calypso about starting a family as a queer couple. We talked to Louisa about starting a family a little bit later in life. We've had lots of these kind of discussions, and also the conversation of like whether to have kids or not is really coming through lots of the episodes, which in my view, really understandably, because it's such a huge topic in the weird years, and it's something that so many of my friends and myself and people I know have been struggling with that decision. Anyway, I saw this video of Alex Cooper, and she's talking about, I'm not ready to have a baby. And she was saying how she has just got married, and they thought like once they were married, they would start trying for a family. And then when it got down to it, she just felt like she had so much going on in her career and so many things she still wanted to do. I think she's 30, 31, but obviously she's got this massive business. She's also just launched a drinks brand. And she was like, I'm just not ready for that change in my life. And it really got me thinking about my own like journey of deciding whether or not to have kids. Because the thing is, me and Chris have never been people who were like 100% yes. I think I've talked about this before, but when I was younger, I used to think like, oh, I'll get married at 26. I'll have a baby at 28. And then when those ages roll around, you're like, oh my God, I'm still literally a fucking child myself, like trying to build a career, trying to cut my teeth in London and actually become like a fully fledged human being. Absolutely no chance of having children for me personally at those ages. And yeah, and then I guess we kind of always had this idea of like, okay, in the future, we'll start a family. Like it will be a future thing. And I've always really thought about it, not as like, oh, I want to have a baby, but as I want like the family unit. I think there can be a real obsession about babies. And I personally just, I didn't really feel that. Mine was more that like, when I look at my grandma, for example, on my dad's side, she's 93, I want to say, and still lives in London. And she's got, you know, kids, and she's got grandkids, and now she's got great grandkids as well. And I always saw her as like the kind of matriarch of the family. And I think that's where I would look and be like, okay, I don't want a baby, but I want like that in the future. I want like that family dynamic. And obviously you have to have a baby in order to, or you have to, you know, have a baby or adopt a baby or create a baby in some way or bring a baby into your life in some way to have that future family. But it always just felt like something which was like, we'll do it in the future. We'll do it in the future. And then the future rolls around really fast. The other thing is, for us, we were never financially stable enough in our view for the lifestyle we wanted to bring a child into the world. So we get to the point where we're thinking, okay, we'll do it in the future, we'll do it in the future. And then the future rolls around and suddenly I'm like, okay, well now I'm 30, and I was thinking, I really want to get married before I have kids. And I'm not religious. This is absolutely in no way like, I don't want to have a bastard in my family, or like, I have to be married in the eyes of the Lord. Like, not at all. I'm so far from being religious. For me, it was literally, I want to look my hottest in my wedding pictures. And I know that sounds really vain, but I was like, if I'm going to spend this amount of money on a wedding in a wedding dress, like I want to look and feel my best. So I was like, let's get married before we have a baby. And there's actually a really funny story. I've actually never told this on the podcast, so maybe I should just do it. I wasn't going to do this, but I will. And people will think I'm psychotic. And all my friends were like, you are a psychopath, which, whatever. But we actually booked our wedding venue before we got engaged. So we knew we really wanted to get married in Mallorca, which is where Chris's parents live. And they kind of live between Germany and Mallorca, but they spend a lot of time in Mallorca. We spend loads of time in Mallorca. And I was like, I really want to get married in Mallorca. So we started looking at it and just being like, let's just scope out what a wedding in Mallorca looks like. Spoke to a couple of wedding planners and they all said, oh, if you want to get married in the next like 2 years, you need to book now. And we were like, oh, well, we're not engaged. So I don't know. And they were like, yeah, well, if you want to do it, you've got to do it. So we were like, oh, fuck, okay. And then I think in the March of that year, we went to go and look at venues in Mallorca. We were like, let's have a look. We can always book something, right? Like, if we want to do it, we want to do it. And we did. We ended up booking a wedding venue and we booked a date. So we had this date a year in advance. And obviously, people get so booked up. So I was just like sending it to my friends and being like, hey, FYI, June 8th, we're going to be getting married. Put it in your diaries. Like, just hold the date. And they're like, sorry, have I missed something? Like, did you guys get engaged? And I'm like, no, we're not engaged. Like, but we are getting married. So put that in your date. Put that date in your diary. And yeah, that's just how it happened. And then this is when we booked it in like March. And then the year's going through and we're planning this for next year. We're starting to book like music. We're starting to book photographers and stuff. And we're still not engaged. And it kind of became a joke. My brother was like, oh, I hope Chris proposes to you before your wedding. And it was just like this silly thing. And then he did propose to me in August. Obviously, it wasn't like, oh my God, this is such a surprise. Because, yeah, we'd paid like fucking, I don't know, 10 grand of deposits by that point. So, but obviously still really, really lovely. We got engaged in, oh my God, why can't I remember? Folkestone. Folkestone's the name of the place. Seaside town in the UK. And I understand that might not sound very romantic to some people because Folkestone is a classic seaside town in the UK. A little bit of crime, a little bit grimy, but also very cute. But I grew up on the South Coast. So for me, being proposed to like literally on a beach on a perfect summer's day, like wading around in the water in my leggings was just amazing. Anyway, look, that was a whole side tangent. I'm just saying, I'm not saying book your wedding and then make your partner propose to you. Or am I saying book your wedding and then make your partner propose to you? It worked, okay? It worked for us. Anyway, sorry, side tangent. So we're engaged. Great. This is moving towards my plan of at some point we will start a family because I will get to wear my dress, look smoking hot, and then after that, have a baby. Great. And as we get close to the wedding, I'm saying to everyone, like, as soon as we get married, like, we're going to try for a baby. Like, I'm coming off birth control and we're going to go for it. Like, I'm going to be pregnant right away, just sort of being a bit silly and about it. And then the wedding happens and it's amazing. And I'm probably looking my best that I've looked in a long time. I have always really suffered with acne when I come off birth control. So I've come off, well, only really once actually in my life when I was about 26, stopped taking birth control with this view of like, at some point I want to have kids. So I'll just come off it, not thinking it would be a massive deal. And let me tell you that hell broke loose. Like, I'm not going to put the photos in this video because I don't need to out myself on the internet like that. But like, if you're struggling with this and you need some reassurance, actually, maybe it's not even reassurance, just some like camaraderie on this journey. I had cystic, horrific acne all over my neck, all over my lower face. I tried everything. I saw every dermatologist. I cut out dairy. I cut out gluten. I cut out sugar. I cut out alcohol. Nothing made a difference. So after a year, having come off the pill back in when I was 26, I went back on. I was like, I can't fucking deal with this. Like, it was so emotionally, anyone who's suffered from acne, like, it is genuinely horrendous. Having to put makeup on to go to the gym is horrendous. Having to put any makeup on to join a Zoom call, to leave your house, because otherwise people would stare because like, it was bad. So I go back on the pill And this has been a massive thing. I was like, there's absolutely no way I'm coming off birth control before the wedding, because like, I know I will get horrendous hormonal acne. So the wedding ends, that's like June. And I'm thinking, okay, I need to come off the pill. But I am so terrified. Like, I can't tell you how upsetting this acne was when I had it last time. Like, every day I was putting makeup on, sometimes I felt so disgusting, and I'm going to use that word, and I know that it is not disgusting, but I felt so disgusting that I couldn't leave the house. Like, it actually makes me quite emotional talking about it, because it was so upsetting. And I was thinking, God, I just can't do that. Like, I cannot do it again. And I would cry to Chris and be like, you know, I want to be on this journey of starting a family, but like, I mentally can't, I can't go back to that place. And I understand people listening to this who have never had horrendous acne will be like, well, baby, yeah, starting a family, like having a child is more important than how you look. Completely understand. But when you have under skin, itchy, disgusting, every day the first thing you do is you run to the mirror and you're like, is it better? Is it worse? Like, oh my God, how is it looking today? It's just gross. It's like, it's really not fun. And the other thing was, I kind of thought that at this point, I'm 31 in the story. Now I'm 33. I'm 31 at this point when we just got married. And I'm kind of thinking, they always say like, oh, your biological clock will kick in and suddenly you'll be like really, really broody for a baby. And don't get me wrong, like I actually like kids a lot. Like, when my nephew was born was a massive turning point for me. Before that, I was very much on this idea of like, I actually don't think I want kids. Like, the lifestyle, I actually have joked on my Instagram many times, and actually not really joking, being quite serious, that objectively having children does look quite horrendous. And I always had that in my mind. I was like, I love early mornings on my own. I love like going to the gym in the middle of the day. I love having my own time. And so I was kind of waiting to either be like, look, we're just not going to do it. And Chris had said, you know, he would like to start a family, but he very much was like, you know, we're together regardless of this. If you don't want children, we don't have children. So I felt really supported in like the decision either way. And I was kind of, yeah, I was waiting this biological clock of like, okay, well, 31, like, when's this going to kick in? And are we going to get that real broodiness? It definitely helped when my nephew was born, like seeing him and seeing my brother and his wife really made me think like, oh, actually, it kind of looks quite nice, but the fear of pregnancy, the fear of my body, the fear of my skin was way more overwhelming. Sorry, I keep going down massive tangents. I need to just get to the point. Wedding is done, June. I'm thinking, okay, I do want to start a family. I want to try to start a family. So I need to come off birth control, but there is no fucking way I'm going cold sober off birth control. Like, what I do not need is horrendous cystic acne and a baby. Those two things together probably would make me want to jump off the roof. So I start working with a nutritionist, and she says, like, maybe you've got PCOS, like, blah, blah, blah. We're doing like all this gut stuff, really like resetting my gut insides. Honestly, I don't really know the science of it. I probably should. I did so many tests for my blood. My hormones were all fine. Tests of my gut, like, I've got leaky gut, but it's not that bad. We're doing all of these nutrition stuff and I'm eating really well, and I'm taking like 20 supplements a day. And I'm feeling like, okay, now we have a plan. I will come off my birth control in like February, and then we'll try for a baby. We'll do all the foundations we can to make sure I'm in my healthiest place for my body, but also that I'm in the healthiest place for my skin to come off the birth control and hopefully be okay with it. And also in this time, I'm really being like, okay, do we want a kid? I don't know if anyone's ever done this. I actually really encourage people to do this if you haven't. Just like, find moments in your day and think like, how would this be different if I had a child? And we used to do it all the time. We'd be at dinner and be like, would we have a kid here right now? Or would we have a babysitter? Or would be like on holiday, like Chris tours a lot, and be like, would we have brought the baby to this? Or would we have left it at home? Or would I have stayed at home with the baby? Like, what would we have done? We were kind of testing these scenarios. And I think the excitement just built a bit more, and we were like, actually, yeah, this does look, this is what we want long term, and maybe we'll never feel ready. And everyone, the other thing people kept saying was like, well, you never feel ready. Like, you just kind of go for it and you work it out. So I do come off my birth control in February. And what happens? Literally 3 weeks in, poof, my face. My face, my neck. Like, you guys might be looking at this and being like, oh, your skin looks fine. If you've seen me any time in the last 5-6 months, you will know that I have perfected the art of makeup. Actually, no, that's way too much credit. I haven't perfected the art of makeup. I just can cover my acne well now. But if you see me in the morning, you will get shocked by my face. And that is how it is. The gut work obviously definitely had an impact, made me healthier, but it didn't stop my acne breaking out. Those hormones still just soccer punched me. And this is a whole other tangent I could go down. And actually, maybe I should find someone who can talk about this on the pod, because I truly believe that I had been on birth control since I was like 16. I feel like I never went through and also I was a late bloomer. Like, I didn't get my period until I was like 15, 16. I was like absolute washboard, didn't have any boobs until I was like 17. I feel like I never went through a true, like, hormonal balance before I was on birth control. And that's a whole other topic. Like, I actually think it's fucked. Like, I think obviously birth control is fantastic in many, many ways. For me, I wish I'd never been on it. I wish I had been taught the responsibility to not get pregnant rather than being on birth control. But again, I'd love to chat to someone on the pod about that, because I also don't want to spread misinformation. Like, maybe I'm just really unlucky and I would have had acne in my 20s anyway. But it was rough. It was rough seeing my face like this again. And I was kind of mentally transported straight back to when I was 26, coming off the pill last time and being like, oh yeah, I fucking hate this. So that was really, really difficult. And I stopped taking the pill. And within, I'm also at this point toying with, I mentioned like my nutritionist had thought maybe I had PCOS. And there's different types of PCOS. There's one that can be like induced by your pill. I don't know if induced is the right word, but like related to taking the pill. So I'm thinking, okay, in 3 months' time, I'll get tested for PCOS. I nearly got tested for it before. I had a scan, but I was still on the birth control. They couldn't diagnose it. Like, that's a whole other story. I think I actually talk about that in my episode with either Calypso or Louisa. We were talking about like fertility checks, but I'm thinking, okay, 3 months' time, we'll go and get this PCOS test, and then we'll understand what's going on with my skin, and we'll understand what's going on with my fertility, because the pill masks, I don't know, again, if masking is the right word, but the pill changes how your hormones are expressed, obviously, and it's not a clear picture of your hormones because you're taking synthetic hormones. So I stopped taking the pill in February, and I was on that one where you take it for 21 days, then you have a 7-day break, and then you take it again. And in that 7-day break, you have like a fake period. It's like a bleed. So your womb lining is like kind of done that thing. It grows up, it pads itself ready for the egg, but you're not ovulating. So the egg never comes. So the womb lining sheds. So it's not like a real period, because it's just like a little bit of womb lining. So I always had super light periods, and it gets to the 21 day mark and I have that. So I'm like, oh, this is actually amazing. Like, I've got my period back, like, straight away. I was not expecting this. I was really thinking, oh, it'll take months for this to come back to normal. Like, I've been on the pill apart from 1 year off since I was 16. And at this point I'm 32. So my birthday's in May. That's why. February this year, I was 32. So I'm thinking, this is good. Like, I guess my hormones are shifting. Like, probably my skin will clear up soon. Like, everything will get back to normal. It'll be fine. And like, we'll go down the route and hopefully our fertility's good. So that happens. Great. And then I'm waiting for my next period. 3 weeks passes and I'm like, okay, so it's not on the 21 day cycle, that kind of makes sense. Another 2 weeks pass, and then by this point my period is like, I think 2 weeks late or something, and I'm thinking like, fuck, I'm just not ovulating. Like, I obviously haven't ovulated because, yeah, like, I haven't had a period. And then in my head I'm like, I wonder if I could be pregnant. Like, that would be crazy, like, to do it straight away, like, not even one kind of full cycle. So this is the other thing. At this point, I'm 2 weeks late. So I'm like, okay, well, maybe you are pregnant. I should take a test. So I take a test. I take the Boots own brand, the cheaper ones. I take two of them in the morning, as you're supposed to do, and they both say negative. So I'm like, okay, this is what I thought. I haven't ovulated. I ring my doctor and I'm like, hey, haven't ovulated. Hey, it's Lydia. Haven't ovulated. What do I do? And he's like, you just wait. You just got to wait. Like, it could take 3 months. It could take 6 months. Like, that's pretty normal coming off the pill. And I'm like, okay, but I had this period. And he says, no, you probably didn't have a period. You probably had a withdrawal bleed, which is where there's like enough hormones still in. Is my nipple out? Oh, no, it's not. Okay, good. God, I don't have to re-record the whole thing. Or just put a little box on it. Maybe I'll just put a little box on my nipple. Sorry. Yeah. And then he was like, you probably had a withdrawal bleed. And I was like, oh, okay. Which is basically like there's still enough of the pill hormones in your body to cause that bleed that you would usually have on the 7 day break. So I'm thinking, okay, fine. And then another like 3 or 4 weeks pass. And now I'm in early June and I've been feeling a bit rough. I was like, I've probably got COVID again. Cause it was like, it seemed like it was coming around again. And every time I get COVID, like, I know I have COVID cause it literally hits me like a slap in the face. I feel exactly the same, super tired, bit nauseous, very fluey. I get a cold and I was kind of having that. And I was like, fuck's sake, I've got COVID again. That's going to knock me out for 10 days as it always does. So I'm just feeling a bit rough. And one day I'm making meatballs, turkey meatballs in the kitchen. And I've actually just moved house. This is the other crazy thing. So we move house into the new house. And at the point that we're moving, I feel really rough. But I'm like, Liz, you have to power through because you need to help pack up this house and move house. So I did. And I'm making turkey meatballs like 2 days after we've moved in. And I'm like, ugh, I feel weird. And I'm making the meatball and I'm like, ugh. I was like, what the fuck? Making the meatball, ugh. Sorry for anyone who really hates this noise. This is actually horrible to listen to on a podcast. But I'm like retching. Not really bad, but enough that I'm like, ugh, get these fucking meatballs done. Don't want to see it. And then I'm chatting to my friend and she's like, oh, yeah, you look kind of rough. I'm actually on a call with Coach Lauren. She doesn't say I look kind of rough. I say I'm feeling horrendous. I'm like in a tank top. I haven't showered. My acne is terrible. I'm lying horizontal while she's coaching me. And she's like, yeah, babe, you don't look super great. And I'm like, I don't look super great, do I? And I was telling her and I was like, yeah, I think I've got COVID. Like, I was retching over these meatballs. And she goes, are you pregnant? And I was like, no, I took 2 tests. And she's like, okay, well, just seems weird. She's like, kind of seems like pregnancy symptoms. I was like, yeah, I know, but like, I haven't ovulated and I've taken 2 tests. So like, absolutely no chance in hell. Anyway, it rolls around and I've got a festival coming up at the weekend with the girls. We're going to see Jamie XX. And then I'm like, okay, but you need to drink through this situation because you still feel unwell. And it's like Friday morning, the festival's on Saturday. I'm like, I'm going to just take another test to triple check, because otherwise tomorrow I'm going to get back on my tequila roll. I love a tequila, for anyone who knows me. Drink of choice, always. Me and tequila, best friends. Yeah, I'm thinking like, you've got to drink through this. That is the only way to go. So I'm like, fine. But I think I'm just going to do another test, because just in case things get really rowdy the next day, what I don't want to do is accidentally like flood a new fetus with tequila. So I'm like, I'll just do another test just to put it out of my mind and know like 100% everything is fine. Drink through it. Cool. So I go and buy like a fancy clear blue digital. I think they're like $14.99. Other brands are available. But I buy one of those. It's got a little digital screen on. Stick it in the bathroom. And then when I wake up the next day, we're sleeping on a mattress on the floor at this point because we've just moved into the house and we don't have a bed yet. And I wake up really early. I'm busting for a wee. It's like 6 a.m. And I go into the loo and I see it on the side of the bath. And I'm like, okay, fine. I'll just do the test now. Because apparently that's the best thing, like pee when your bladder's really full from the nighttime. And so I pull it out and I pee and I put it down. I'm completely half asleep. I've actually never done a digital pregnancy test before. It's like loading, loading, loading. And then the screen shows up and it just says pregnant. And I'm like waiting for the little knot part to show up. And it doesn't. It just says pregnant. So I'm like, first thing, I've woken up at 6 a.m. I'm very, very confused. And I'm tired as fuck. And I'm like, wait, this is weird. Like, I can't be pregnant because I haven't ovulated. And I know I haven't ovulated because I haven't had a single proper period since February. All I've had is a withdrawal bleed. And I've also taken a test like 3 weeks before, two tests from Boots own brand, and they were negative. Anyway, I go into the bedroom, kind of say to Chris, like, Chris, I'm really confused. He's like, what? Because he's also asleep at 6 a.m. I'm like, I'm really confused, and shove this pregnancy test in his face. And he's like, ah? And we're both just flabbergasted, to say the least. Very, very confused. And we're both staring at this test like, what the fuck? So the first thing I do as a 32-year-old woman is I ring my mum. And I'm like, mum, she's on holiday with a friend. She's also in bed horizontal because it's 6 a.m. And I'm like, mum, I have a positive pregnancy test. And she's like, oh, that's great. And I'm like, no, it doesn't make sense. None of this makes sense. I don't understand. And she's like, well, it's positive. And I'm like, yeah, I guess. And then we stop talking, whatever. I text my best friend, Hannah. She's also been on the pod, Divorced at 31. If you haven't watched that episode, it's very, very good. And I'm like, is this legit? And she's like, yeah, babe, it's a positive pregnancy test. They tend to be quite legit. And I was like, I don't believe it at all. So we're in a state of like complete shock. And I feel like you expect to have like immediate, like, oh my God, excitement. And I guess I was excited, but I was just confused. I didn't understand. It didn't feel real. It was like, there's no possibility that this is what's happening. So they're almost like, the only thing I can say is like, I felt numb. I didn't really feel anything particularly. And I'd kind of envisioned this moment in my head of being like, oh my God, yes. Cause you think you'd be trying and then you finally get the test you want. You're like, oh my God, yes. And I was just like, just confused as fuck. And then, yeah, I don't know. Yeah. It was just a lot. And I rang the doctor and I'm like, hey, so this has happened. And he's like, okay, well, when's the date of your last period? I was like, well, we have talked about this, but I haven't had a period. And I tell him about the withdrawal bleed again, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, oh, so you could be dated all the way back to February for your pregnancy. And I was like, well, I don't know, doctor. I don't even know how periods work. If I'm really honest, I'm an ill-informed woman with a womb. So he says to me, okay, well, we'll just send you to like an emergency clinic, because if you're dating all the way back to February, we're now in June. We're in early June, February, March, April, May, June. Like, you could be 4 months pregnant. And I was like, huh? Terrifying, terrifying consideration. So I get sent to Whitechapel Hospital. And again, I'm like, it's not sinking in at all. And by this point, you're probably listening being like, bitch, you're pregnant. Like, sink in. Like, why is this taking so long to get through your head? But it just wasn't. Like, it just didn't make any sense to me. Especially as like, I'll also just say, we weren't having loads of sex by this point. We'd just moved house. We were on a mattress on the floor. Like, we were not slamming much. Sorry, that's a horrible expression. We were not making love in our marital bed often. because, yeah, we were tired and we were sleeping on a mattress on the floor and we'd been traveling and all of this stuff. I go into this scan and I'm expecting it to be up on the belly. It's not on the belly, it's through the punani, and they're looking and they're looking, and then I see this, like, of how you imagine a scan of a baby, like a woo, like the triangle opens up. I don't know why it went woo in my head, it went woom, and it showed my womb, and then there was this little blob, and she was like, that's a fetus. I don't think she actually used the word fetus. She might have used another word. But she was like, yeah, there's something there. And she's scanning in, and then I see this little flick, like a tiny little flick on the screen. By the way, Chris is not here. He's at home, because we were both just so confused and kind of thinking this wasn't going to be like a pregnancy. So he's at home because we've got an IKEA order coming. And we're like, well, we can't rearrange IKEA. It's a fucking nightmare. You stay at home. I'll go to the hospital. So I do. I'm on my own. And I see this tiny little flicker. And again, this is going to make me quite emotional. It was very, yeah, it was like instantly, I was like, oh. Now I was like, oh, that's a tiny little heartbeat. Insane. And she's measuring it. And she's like, you're 6.5 weeks pregnant. Well, 6 weeks and 3 days. That's how they measure it pregnant. And I'm like, wow. The other thing that was very overwhelming in this story, I don't know why I'm tearing up, very weird, is that, well, I'm tearing up because it was very sad for the other people there. This clinic was an emergency clinic at Whitechapel Hospital. So people get sent there when they're having challenges with their pregnancy and they need to be seen immediately. So I come out of the waiting room and I'm like, still shocked as hell, but I'm really happy and I feel incredibly grateful. And I'm like, wow, this is crazy turn of events that I was not expecting. I really thought it was going to be like 6 months, a year of trying, actively trying, pissing on sticks, doing all of that. I really geared myself up for that journey. And honestly, I'd thought about all the content I was going to make for you guys on the pod about that journey. And I sit down in the waiting room because they like send you some information or whatever. And there's women who clearly have not had good news. And that was really heartbreaking because I'm kind of trying to sort of hold in, I guess, my excitement and not smile too much. And I'm texting Chris being like, I'm fucking 6 weeks pregnant. I'm texting Hannah and I'm texting my mum being like, I'm 6 weeks pregnant. What the hell? Whilst women are coming out who are visibly upset, who obviously haven't had good news. And I hope this isn't triggering for anyone hearing it. But yeah, there was just like this, the whole thing was just very overwhelming. And then I come back home and we're like, wow, 6 weeks pregnant. And there was a lot of immediate thoughts at this point. I mean, one immediate thought was I look at Chris and went, why the fuck have I married a man who's 6'6"? He is a ginormous human being. I am also 5'10". How on earth is this? How am I going to birth this child? It's going to be huge. And there's also just so much excitement of like, oh my God, I feel so grateful to have this be my journey so far. Like, I know 6 weeks is very, very early. I know the data around what can happen at this point, but I felt so lucky that so far this had been the journey. And so that very long-winded, what are we at? I think, oh my God, I've talked so much. This long-winded story was to tell you that I am in fact pregnant and expecting the end of January. So very, very excited. Very, very nervous. All of those fears of birth and pregnancy have definitely not gone away, but I feel like I'm so proud of my, not proud of, I'm so grateful to my body for this having happened so far easily for us. Yeah, that's the news. I'm actually going to do a part two, but before we go into a part two, I just want to say the first thing that was such a big decision on this was, who do I tell? When do I tell people? Obviously, I told my mum straight away. I told my best friend straight away. But then I had this gig the next day with all my girlfriends. And normally I'm like hot on the tequila. So I was like, well, if I'm not drinking, they're going to obviously know something's wrong. And I could lie and I could be like, oh, my IBS is playing up, which is also a very relevant excuse for me. Or, you know, I'm feeling anxious or whatever. But it also just felt like such a fucking hugely momentous thing. So I was like, I'm just going to tell them. So I tell pretty much all my girlfriends straight away at 6 weeks. We tell together, Chris's parents. We tell a bunch of friends who are very, very close to us. And I know that the rule is, quotation marks, that you should not tell anyone before 12 weeks, because statistically that is where like the biggest risk of miscarriage is. The earlier you are, the higher the risk of miscarriage. But in my head, I was like, look, this is such a huge thing. I don't feel like I can keep it for my friends to start with, because I am, obviously you guys know from the pod, I'm a big old blabber mouth. Very few thoughts are kept inside this tiny, tiny pea head of mine. And also, like, I was feeling fucking horrendous. I was waking up every day feeling like the worst hangover of my life. Like, it was impossible to not realize. And I was saying to my friends, I didn't tell my sister for a little while, and she kept being like, how are you feeling? How are you feeling? And I'd be like, I feel horrendous. And it's like, there's only so many weeks you can tell people that you love that you feel horrendous until that you're like, I just want to tell them the truth. So I told a lot of people, and I think that's a really interesting, it's a really interesting thing for me to then, in my overthinking strategist brain, be like, why do they say you shouldn't tell before 12 weeks? I understand the risk of miscarriage. But for me personally, I knew that if that was to happen, these people who I told, and the lens that I told people through was like, I will only tell people who I would tell if something went wrong. Like, that for me was like my guiding, I guess, principle, was like, if I would tell them if something went wrong, then I will tell them that I'm pregnant. And I did. And I think it kind of harps back to there being a feeling for like of shame maybe around miscarriages. Like, historically there perhaps is shame around a miscarriage, or judgment or self-judgment, when it is a very sad, difficult reality of the creation of life, is that it's not always 100% a hit. And also, I think I was talking to one of my friends about this, who has had a number of miscarriages and also had a number of successful pregnancies. And she always tells people every time she's pregnant, and she said that it's just, I don't really care about making other people uncomfortable with my grief. Like, it's my grief. And I want to be able to lean on the people who I want. And I was like, this is so fucking true. Like, it's such a British thing to feel like, well, I can't burden them with my sadness. I don't want to make them sad with my sad. I don't want to make anyone uncomfortable with my misery. And I really, I bought into that. And I mean, so far the pregnancy has gone well. I'm now 4 months, I want to say. I might have felt really differently had something gone wrong. I might have really regretted telling people. I definitely, over the last weeks, have sometimes, like, my immediate anxiety around health and now having this baby inside me definitely kicked off of, like, I feel more health anxious. And there was times when I was like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have told these people. Like, maybe I've told too many people. And I probably would have, maybe I would have felt differently if something had happened, like, negative had happened. But I just wanted to talk about that because I think so many people even said to me, like, oh, you're not waiting till 12 weeks. And I was like, no, I'm not. For my close friends, I'm not going to do that. But it's just an interesting thing, I think, in the dialogue of pregnancy and in the dialogue of how blame can be placed sometimes on women for something which is 100% out of their control and not their fault. So yeah, I just want to talk about that. Actually, one of my friends gave really good advice, my friend Hannah. she said, I was like, I'm thinking of telling these people, I'm going to see them tomorrow. Like, what do you think I should do? But bear in mind, this is on the day I found out. So I'm still like completely fucking overwhelmed. And she just said, think about who your friends are. And if they've had any challenges with fertility or in the space, obviously move like with extra caution. And I was like, yes, of course. And she said that she had heard from people who've had pregnancy loss that it was easier for them to hear via a text, which can sound really impersonal, but because if you're telling someone face to face or you're telling someone like on a phone call, they have to have like an immediate reaction. And obviously like you want them to have a positive reaction. They want to give a positive reaction, but there's so many feelings caught up in that, like challenge of pregnancy loss or challenge of if you're trying to start a family and you're having fertility issues and then you hear another one of your friends is pregnant, like that can be really, really difficult. And she was like, maybe just tell some people by text. And I thought that was just such valuable advice and really, really thoughtful. And something, I guess, just to consider is I had other people who said, you know, well, people will be happy for your happiness. Completely, I completely agree. But there are people in my life who I did wait to 12 weeks because I knew that they'd gone through challenges like this. And I didn't want to cause any fear in them on behalf of me. I didn't want them to like worry for me, if that makes sense. And yeah, so that was just something that I decided on. The other thing was like, what do I tell my work? Because I'm a freelancer. And yeah, you're kind of expected to show up every day and just like smash it out every single day. That's why you get paid a better day rate. Like there's no slacking. You have to come in, deliver, and that's that. So I also told my boss at like, I think 7 weeks or something, because I felt fucking horrendous. Like, let's go into the first trimester. Let's go into the myth of the first trimester versus the reality, for me anyway, of the first trimester. Every day, I woke up feeling horrendous. Morning sickness, myth. For me, myth. All day sickness, yes, absolutely. I felt like I was going to vomit every minute of every day. Did I vomit? I actually didn't vomit, which is... I realize I'm really, really lucky for, because when I was talking to people who've had babies, I can't remember the thing's called. I want to see it's called HGEG. I really should know this to talk about it on the pod. But there's a condition where you get really bad nausea to the point that some people are hospitalized for it. And actually, my friend has it every single time she's pregnant. One of my other friends had it to the point that she was hospitalized. These are all like friends of friends, by the way, because none of my immediate friends in the UK have had children apart from one has. They've had two children now. The myth of morning sickness, I'm calling bullshit. I didn't have morning sickness, I had all day sickness. The myth of supersonic smell, for me, yeah, so true. I could smell anything. I was like a bloodhound. We moved into this new house, right, and I was on the top floor. It's four floors, and I'd be sitting on the bed feeling nauseous as fuck. And I would smell cigarette smoke and I'd be like, what is that? Go out on the balcony, nobody smoking. And then I look down and in the garden next door on the ground floor, this girl has just lit a cigarette, like just lit it. And literally with her first puff, it's gone all the way up four floors and I smell it because I am a bloodhound. I can smell everything. So that for me was very, very true. It seems to have stopped now, to be honest. It seemed to really only be like, I don't know, I found out at week six. It was kind of weeks like 6 to 12. It was like first trimester for me personally. And it's funny because it kind of ties into the craving thing, because the other thing people keep asking me is like, oh, do you have any weird cravings? And I was like, not really. But if I smell something or if I see something, I'd be like, that's exactly what I want. I won't like spontaneously have a craving. But for example, I walked past a man it was actually on the tube. This man smelled like yogurt. Most people would be like, that's disgusting. For me, I was like, oh my God, I need to eat a yogurt. And it had to be a Crunch Corner. Ideally, it would have been the one with the little banana pieces, but they didn't have that. I got a different one. Haven't eaten a Crunch Corner probably in 5 years. And I was like, that's the only thing I can eat right now. Or I'd be like, I just want beige food. I want a chicken Kiev. I want something dirty and disgusting and cheap and delicious. I wanted a lot of beige food in my first trimester. The other thing, which was, I actually was really lucky because I still could eat. I would like make a whole dish, be really, really hungry, sit down, and then look at it and be like, oh, the amount of times Chris heard, I don't want to eat this. I can't eat this so often. But I would force myself to eat. And I know some people, like my nutritionist was saying, she has a client who can literally only eat like plain white bread and butter. That's no life. That is no life. That's, and also, what is the fucking biological, like what is the biology of making you feel like you're going to vomit every 5 seconds when you're trying to grow life? Like surely you need the nutrients to be able to grow the baby. So why does your body make you feel so disgustingly sick? It does not make any sense. Like that's something they didn't get right in evolution. Like don't make food repulse me if you're trying to get me to eat to grow this baby. Doesn't make sense. The other thing was like the brain fog of feeling so ill, and then I would eat, and then I'd have like, it was almost like how I imagine or how I've seen dementia be expressed, is that when my granddad had dementia, towards the end, he was very, like, he didn't really know what was going on a lot of the time. But then he'd get a window of what they call, like, lucidness, or, I don't know if that's the right word, a window of being lucid. And he would be, like, back in the room and know all of us and know what's going on. And that's kind of how I felt. It's like, I'd feel fucking horrendous, eat, and then for, like, half an hour, I'd have, like, a lucid window, and I'd be like, oh, I need to edit the podcast, I need to do my work, I need to go for a walk. And then I would just crash back down to being nauseous again. Like that was my experience. Now I'm so happy to say that I think I got to like week 11, 12 and it started to pass. And now I don't really have the nausea. I'm super tired, but I don't have the nausea. The other thing I found in these early days was like a weird instant protectiveness. There was like this immediate like, oh, I'm going to keep this thing safe inside me. Even though I haven't wrapped around what this looks like, I'm going to keep this thing really, really safe. Which was interesting. It did feel immediate. And also the fear of something going wrong was like my innate default. I was like checking the toilet paper every time I went to the toilet and like, you know, checking for blood and having cramps, and ChatGPT was my absolute best friend. Like ChatGPT has been my like prenatal nurse. I've just been asking it everything, anything. Even like I asked it, like if I sneeze too hard, can I dislodge the baby? Because I'm like, this tiny little thing is like, I honestly think when I saw it on the screen, it was like the size of a lentil or a grain of, I think it was, oh, it was a grain of rice because we called it Condoleezza rice. I don't know why, it just where our brains went. And I was like, this tiny piece of rice, like surely if I move too much, the rice is going to get dislodged. Thankfully that really didn't happen, but these ideas of like, if I sneeze too much, is it going to go wrong? If I fart too hard, is it going to go wrong? Like so many questions. And ChatGPT has just been my best friend for that. So that is the journey of, are we going to have kids? When do we have kids? Should we try for kids? Or we need to do this with my body before we have kids because of the acne. Let's try for a kid. Bam, pregnant. That has been the very long-winded, God, I'm so sorry. This really has gone on for a long time, like 50 minutes. I'm going to do a part two. That was very much the practical journey of getting there. I want to do a part two on like how I'm feeling about this in the weird years and all of my fears and thoughts and everything to do with the weird years. So we'll call this part one. I just want to reassure people that the whole pod is not going to be about pregnancy now, like absolutely not. And we've got some really amazing guests coming out. We have Lauren, who came on to talk about having an ADHD diagnosis and how she navigates that with dating, with her career. Who else we have? We had Mackie, who's coming on, and she's talking about kind of not focusing so much on the search for the one and really focusing on inner work and how it's led her to this amazing house in Portugal and moving her life there and creating this like fun and very like eclectic creative community. Who else we've got coming up? We have Emma Louise Boynton coming up talking about sex and what that means in the weird years. So just be reassured that this is not our baby podcast. Like, don't get me wrong. Will I be spamming my personal Instagram with some content? Absolutely. I will do anything I can to push this pod out to the world. And if that means me making embarrassing reels with my bump, like, just know I will do that. But yeah, thank you very much for listening. And that is the news. And I love you all. And I hope everything's well. And yeah, thank you for listening.